This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. New from Moultrie Mobile, the Feed Hub offers first-of-its-kind cellular connection and control for nearly any spin cast feeder on the market. When used with the Moultrie Mobile app, you can monitor feed and battery levels, run feeders on demand, receive alerts when feeders are clogged, and remotely adjust feeding times. The Feed Hub is ideal for anyone who maintains feeders. Remove the guesswork and save time by planning feeder maintenance before you drive to your hunting property. For more information, visit MoultrieMobile.com.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need. From athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at BestWestern.com.
Welcome to the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast with your host, Andy, Micah, Nate.
I don't feel like you should gloss over the fact that Andy made it. And you are in the same room right now.
I was about to say, hang on, time out, because I made several that Micah was not at. We just have not been at the same one for a while.
Micah's doing a lot of opportunity. Micah has taken a lot of liberties to talk some smack in your absence the past few weeks.
You just have would have
you,
to
you
listen.
Tell
to
I, you could tell. Yeah. You could tell. It really bothered me.
Andy, right. Andy doesn't get us that download that we need.
No, but we also have in studio tonight returning guests. How many shows you been on?
It's happening, folks.
Yeah,
It's happening.
We got Scott Wilper. Live, this had to be number four. Is this number four?
At least. Four or five.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's four or five.
At least minimum once a year for every year. We've been doing it for 3 years. Yeah. And I think there's been a couple years, a couple times. So.
Yeah, because we've talked to him about.
Is this 4 years?
Oh.
We've done 4 years, right?
Yeah. Remember? 208. Got to celebrate 4 years, not 200 episodes.
Yeah, we haven't mid 4 years yet.
Nope, close. Not yet.
So
close
almost.
To. Yeah. Almost.
Actually, anyways. Probably have. It's probably over 208 now.
But little fun fact, you were probably the most requested guest and the ones that people talk about.
Yeah.
Like really? That I know, yeah.
More
yeah.
questions,
yep.
yeah.
Yep. They love them.
Yeah, we got several messages after I released our first ever Missouri Woods and Water Classic episode, which was episode number 6, if I remember correctly.
Right.
Our first time with Scott, where we went out to his place and sat down with him. I think it was just me and you, Andy.
Yeah, I didn't make the first one.
And after that show, we had a lot of.
Oh wait, Mike, are you going to have? You didn't go to that one. You weren't on that one, huh?
No, I wasn't.
Oh,
I said.
Must have been doing.
I looked that man right in his eye socket, in the optics of his soul, and I said, looks around pantingly, bitch. But yeah, anyway, we had a bunch of messages. Are you going to have them back on, I guess, fresh?
Right, new one?
And I said, yeah, we just didn't get to it in time. So we did a little teaser, you know, just a tip. Just a right. tease.
Classic yep. teaser.
Yep, exactly.
Was it? That's the. Is that the push broom? Oh, there's a name for the turkey you had. You told that story.
Yeah, the push broom.
Push broom.
Bird, yeah.
Still remember.
That was in Kansas.
Yep.
Yeah, it's we had on the way here. I've had two Missouri Woods and Waters reaching out there. Illinois, Byron in Illinois, a truck driver listens to Missouri Woods and Water.
Shout out Byron.
Single. What's up, Byron?
Appreciate it.
And Miles Becker in Grandview today. All
well, thank you, Miles.
Listening to you guys. So
trying to figure out if old boy in Illinois has got a death wish. He's trying to listen to us while he's driving.
Oh, Byron, he's in Indiana.
Oh, you said Illinois.
Illinois, Indiana. I'm in Indiana.
I'm just wondering if he's got a death wish or something. He's listening to Missouri Woods and Water while he's driving. Not smart.
I'm confused.
Hey, he did find nine pounds of mushrooms right today.
Nine pounds?
Damn.
They've been I've heard of some people finding them around here.
Nine pounds of them. He sent me a picture, old bowl of them. I was now you need some fried turkey to go with that.
Oh, yeah. Man.
So he's all fired up.
That's awesome.
Go for the old Missouri trifecta.
Speaking of a wild game. A
couple slabs of crappie.
My son and I, last night, I'm not going to get in details, but I'm on a forced diet right now for health reasons. So I cannot eat beef at the freaking moment. So last night, I made steaks for the family. And me and my son Chase made up his tenderloins on his deer from this year. They were good.
So you could eat deer, but you couldn't eat beef?
I can eat venison, but not beef right now. Mm. Yep. And that was good. It was really good.
Awesome.
I was a little worried because I've never actually cooked tenderloin. Yeah. I've never gotten deer made. I've never gotten steaks made with deer. I've always just done sausage, jerky, or then ground. That's all I've ever really done. And I was a little worried about it, but it turned out pretty damn good.
Not good stuff to cook, right?
Did you smoke it or did you
grilled it?
The
Blackstone.
Yeah.
A little salt and pepper. Then butter on it.
Oh, yeah. Can't go wrong with butter.
Mm-hmm. No. It was really good. I don't know if I got it quick enough because I was cooking it with the steaks. Uh-huh. So I didn't, you know, I was a little worried about it getting too done. Mm-hmm. You know, same thing with elk, right? You get it too much and all of a sudden it's like a briquette. But it's pretty good. Pretty darn good. I was pretty happy with it. And Chase loved it, so that was a plus.
That's the most important right there.
Yeah. Yeah, because we got more in there.
I mean, that's pretty cool, you know, that he's, how old is he?
10.
10 years old, killed his first deer, eating his first deer.
Yep.
Pretty cool.
Actually, so I made one of the tenderloins, which is pretty good size, so I just made one for the two of us, cut it in half. Bennett had some, Caden had some, so I only ate about 6 or 7 cuts. Because the other boys kept eating.
He said, a-holes, eat your steak.
I'm like, I can't eat this. You eat this. But I wasn't going to tell them no. They enjoyed it. So it was good. Couldn't get my wife or daughter to try it, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
My family eats it.
I know. I think they got a mental hang up on that for some reason.
My wife does too.
Yeah.
Amy used to.
I actually took a piece of it. I had a pile. So I cut up everybody's steak for them.
Still. Oh, yeah. Thanks a lot for that, asshole. Yeah.
So
guess what I have to do now?
I had a pile of steak cut, and I looked at Chase and I said, shh. And I took a piece of the venison, stuck it in there. And Becca goes, what did you just do? She caught me.
She watching you like a hawk.
Nothing.
I didn't do nothing.
She goes, if there's a piece of deer in there, I won't eat any of it. So I reached back over.
Should have just grabbed a piece of steak.
I should have. But I thought, I'm going to make her or our daughter eat this. And I'm going to afterwards go, ha, you ate deer and didn't even know it. But it didn't work. But we're going to talk about some good topics tonight.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about. Actually, Scott Wilper is the turkey man. We all know this. We're going to talk about coyotes first.
That's right. It got real interesting on the first coyote hunt ever.
I've heard you've been bit by the bug.
Oh, yeah.
We've converted someone, fellas.
Yeah.
We've converted someone.
I loved it.
Before we get into it, let's get through our sponsors, that make this show possible, and then we'll get into it. So Weber Outfitters, Hawk Point, Missouri, go check them out. Athlon Optics, ridiculously good optics. Onyx, use the code MWW20, save yourself 20%. Camo Fire, Black Ovis, at Black Ovis, you can use the code MWW10 for 10%. Huntworth, use the code MWW15 for 15% off. Alps Outdoors, use the code 2024 Woods Water. 30%, huge savings. They have some of the best turkey vests.
I was going to say turkey season is coming up. Grab your turkey vest.
Go check out their stuff.
Did you see, there was a new company that was marketing? I'm not going to say who it was, but they were marketing the kickstand pack.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm funny, because Alps has had that for about a decade.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Zamberland boots, Reveal cameras by Tacticam, and then our buddy Dustin Williams over there at Habitat Works. Check him out on his Facebook page, or you can give him a call,
816-752-7190.
Who
left this
bad? No, my eyes are getting bad. I can't read that.
Mention us when you call and get 15% off any service. We appreciate all our sponsors. We just wanted to run through that really quick because we wanted to
talk to Scott. For you.
Yeah.
Micah needs to get LASIK.
I guess so. I can see it there, but once I get highly back recommend. Here, that looks like a one.
Highly recommend there's lasers in your eyes.
I had that done in September.
Did it help out quite a bit?
Oh, yeah. Dude, it's Andy, badass, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Andy got his done. It was right before we went for elk hunting. Yeah, I remember that. So, now hopefully.
I was running into the problem where if I focus, the bead gets clear, then the gobbler's head would be a little blurry. Or squinting and adjusting my eyes, I get the gobbler's head clear and then the bead's blurry.
Yeah.
But, I've got the gobble stopper on top of the gun now. Now I've switched to the Hawk scope. That's pretty good. But
is it just a low power scope, the Hawk?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. 1-4 low power scope. But, man, that is sweet. Yeah.
I've always had that issue, but that's, I think, mostly because I'm left eye dominant, using my right eye for everything. And but I've got, knock on wood, perfect vision. It's just I usually have to concentrate on both targets for a second, and then they'll both be clear.
I got the CHS for the shotgun. Hit shit.
You got to call them in first before you can even shoot at them, right?
That's about right, too.
So,
but speaking of calling stuff in, Scotty, so this is how we found out. We were at the Midwest Wildlife sign-ups, I guess you'd call it, that Friday night before their tournament. And me, you, and all of our guys that were hunting were there, Daryl, all the guys, and we're sitting there screwing around. And I look over, and I'm like, oh, I'm pretty sure that's Scott Wilper sitting over there. So
I didn't see him.
Walk over. Yeah, him and his hunting partner was up front. And I said, Scott! And sat down and talked to them, and they decided they were going to try coyote hunting in this tournament.
Yeah.
So how'd it go? Break it down for us.
Break down your first.
Well, shit, if you called one in that day, you'd asses.
Just listen.
He did beat us.
Listen.
Explain.
I had a bunch of questions. I mean, we knew nothing.
Yeah.
Watched a few
YouTube. You had never coyote hunted before.
Nope. You know, you coyote hunt when you're deer hunting late in the year or whatever, or something like that, if one comes by. Actually, going out to call in a coyote and kill it. No.
Right.
Never have been before. So I was just asking Nate questions. Should we do this? What should we do? How do you? He said, just paint the picture. Just like turkey hunting, paint the picture. You know, on your calls, whenever you're howling or your growls. Mm-hmm. You know, what are they fighting over? Paint the picture like turkey hunting. So, that's what I did. We went up to Salisbury. Mm-hmm. We got a farm up there, and set up. It was breaking daylight, and I let out an invitation howl. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I don't know what I'm doing. My buddy's sitting 10 yards from me and watching one way, and we're watching the other way, and we got that. What's that thing?
Decoy.
Had your decoy
that
going.
That decoy, yeah. It was spinning around. That old tail was and everything. And so I did the invitation howl. Then I let out a male long howl. Mm-hmm. Waited a few minutes, and then I did it. I think I did a rabbit distress, if that was. I did the rabbit distress. And then I did a bunch of growling, like they're mm-hmm. fighting over it. And just trying to paint the picture.
Right.
You know, I was going through the thing. You know, I don't know what I'm doing here. I need a long beard here.
Well, truthfully, you know, all companies are like this. Sometimes you don't know exactly
what call is
going to be, because uh-huh. it doesn't say invitation or,
yeah.
you know, sometimes it's just the name of something and how.
Yeah.
So, you know, until you really know what they mean, sometimes you're just, yeah, we'll see what this one is, and you hit it.
Right. Well, I'd done it for just, you know, 5 to 8 minutes, whatever it was, just tried to paint this picture like he was saying, and mm-hmm. I'm just sitting here going, I don't know how this is going to go all day long. And I look out there across the field, and it's a long field. Follows the East Fork Sheridan River. And this, you know, it's 20 yards of timber along the river, and then it's just a field forever. And I see this speck come out. Like 600 yards out.
Oh, yeah.
There ain't no way that heard me on that. Seriously? And it's just coming to me on a beeline. Oh, this is cool.
That's even better.
I was hooked right there.
Yep.
Just because it's like turkey calling. Mm-hmm. I painted a picture and it worked. You know, they don't always work.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been 0-9 after this.
we're 0-11 that day.
Yep. At 7 a.m., I was batting 1,000. Yeah. But he came all the way, you know, 500, 400, 300. And he got to 200. And then about 150, where I was sitting, I could not see this spot in this field.
Uh-oh.
That was, yes, this is where we start going south. It was a pretty, it's a low spot in the field, and it's holding about a foot of water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know how, 20 yards wide and 40 yards long. And that's where he stopped, right at that. But I couldn't see the water. I couldn't even see the bottom part of his legs, just his body and head.
Right.
And he started to turn. I'm like, something's up. The gig's up.
Right.
He's winded me or the setup. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
He's leaving the scene. It's now or never. So I took a shot at him, and it just went grazed right over the top of him.
Oh.
So then, and again, I'm shooting a Henry 243 lever action.
Oh, nice.
So,
yes. That's awesome.
So here comes the second round, and it jams.
Uh-oh.
No.
And I'm in this little blind thing, and anyway, I finally get it in there. So the second shot's at 325, and the third shot's at 450.
We're just going to send
it. And last I heard, the coyote's in St. Louis right now. So, but anyway, after I come out of the blind, and then my buddy said, you got the whole pack down, you know. There's usually three or four coyotes you're in the money right. in this oh, tournament.
Right. Yeah.
And here I just shot three shots right off the bat 10 minutes after we started.
Right.
He's thinking, we've got first place wrapped up.
Oh,
Wilbur
man.
Never misses. Where are they all at? Headed to St. Louis.
That's awesome.
So then I got to thinking about it. Why did he leave? He wasn't leaving.
He couldn't get to
around.
You.
He just was.
He was just going
to
go around that.
Yeah.
He would have just came right into our lap. But the wind was in my face, and he's out in front of me.
Right. Yeah.
He was just going to go around that
yeah.
and come on in.
I mean, a lot of coyote hunting is, honestly, once again, sort of like turkey hunting. You read their body language, you know, more than anything. Like when we all first started coyote hunting, we probably would have shot in that exact moment as well. But you can tell almost if they're
once they get in skitty. It,
or if they're skittish, mm-hmm. or if they're not quite sure. You can really yeah. get a good idea. And like a dog like that that came from 600 to 150 in a matter of however long.
That's what I'm saying. Hindsight's 20/20 yeah. now. What you're saying, all, he was committed.
Yes.
I mean, it was just a dot. Yeah. When I first seen him, I'm thinking, there's no – you could tell the way they – you know, mm-hmm. a coyote runs or mm-hmm. when they're trotting.
Like a lope type.
A lope to him. Mm-hmm. I knew immediately, even though it was just a dot so far out, I knew it was a coyote the way he was moving.
Right. Yep.
And yeah, he was committed because he came all that way.
It's kind of like the last night we went out all together, me, you, Micah Calder.
Oh, that one, yeah. It was yeah. 900 yards.
Where she came, 900,000-ish like yards. It took her forever, but all of us knew minutes. She was coming. We could tell that she was coming. She just didn't really care that much.
And she tried to circle our wind, and she came obviously a long way, but yep. she came.
And she had to cross a gravel road to get to us, and we let her do
no
it.
No kidding.
Because mm-hmm. we thought she was going to. And she did, and now she's dead.
We just finally we finally found that sound that pissed her off yeah. enough to cross it.
But it took her half an hour.
Yeah, that was the longest
to get there.
Yeah,
we were freezing by the end of it.
Yeah,
Calder was shivering.
He was.
Well, we weren't really prepared for what the temperatures were going to do that.
It
night.
Just dropped hard right there.
Yeah, yeah. It did.
But we've all been there. But guess what? Officially, that day. You did better than any one of our teams.
Hell yeah.
Because not a single one of us called a dog.
I didn't see a damn coyote. Well, yeah. I take that back. We seen one first set of the day at 400 yards, and it wanted nothing to do with us.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he didn't. I saw I one, saw but he never saw it.
It was by far the worst day of coyote hunting I've ever been.
Coyoting?
Yeah.
That's a good word.
Coyoting?
Coyoting.
I'm going to use that.
Yeah. Trademark.
That's a terrible day of coyoting.
Yeah.
Terrible day of coyoting.
Yeah.
I was hooked, though. It just.
Yeah, I was talking to your son-in-law, Tony, at church. We were actually watching our kids in the nursery one Sunday, and he said you've been bit by the bug. He's like, man, he's gone out a few times. He's been trying to get it done. He just hasn't been able to get it done yet. And
then the rest of the day, well, you know, I don't remember. We had about seven sets and, mm-hmm. and, you know, over seven after that. And then they're we're going to have to get together.
Yeah.
I've got a problem at my place. Bad
deal.
I've got a 35, 38 pound gobbler.
Uh oh.
He's dead.
Did you find him or you just know he's gone?
I don't know. I had to have been a Yodi or a pack of them. I've got one heck of a fence mm-hmm. built around this thing, and there was a small gap.
Oh, so you're talking about domestic?
Yes.
Turkey. Okay.
Oh, you're talking, okay.
Just so yeah. we're clear, it was domestic turkey.
Yeah, domestic turkey. I mean, he's so big. He can't even get up on a 2-foot pole no more.
Right.
I mean, when it's time to go to bed, we just sit down. You know what I'm saying? And then he stands. He's got no
more roosting.
No more roosting. Wakes up and wants a large pizza.
My turkey.
He ain't seen his weenus in 10 years.
I love to have them, a hen and a gobbler. We get them every couple of years. Because I listen to them, mm-hmm. their sound. You know, mm-hmm. that's how I tune the calls is to them. But something got in my pen, and the gap right at the hinge is about 8 inches and then goes down to nothing on the gate. So, I mean, whatever mm-hmm. it was got in. Okay, can a coon get through that? Yes.
Sure.
Coon. I don't think coon will kill a turkey.
But we're talking about, a 35-pound gobbler here that was torn to pieces.
There's three animals that would have done it.
Yeah, fox, bobcat, or coyote.
I'm talking yep. wing over here. You know, they didn't take it and take off with it.
Right.
This all happened in the pen of total destruction.
That makes me think fox almost.
Did they eat them?
The leg here, the leg over there, wings scattered. The head was over there. And they did get one of the wings out of the pen.
Mm-hmm.
And they was kind of down by my ditch by the creek 50 yards away. And they was eating on that. But no. Well, I never did find none of the breast meat. Yeah, I'd say it was pretty much eaten, except for the wings and legs and stuff like that.
That makes me think coyote more.
Yeah, maybe.
Because fox will...
But we're talking about, you know, gobbler's tough.
I say even a fox, though, is pretty small to take down a bird that big.
I tackled one time.
A fox?
A gobbler.
Oh, okay.
My dad had a little problem hitting one time and run out of shells. And there were one pellet hit this thing.
So it was, yeah.
And it was discombobulated. Didn't know right from left or whatever. This thing's doing 20-yard circles. And Dad says, give me another shell. I said, Dad, we don't have any more shells. We just went through seven shells. We're done. And he's still running. It was my dad's first gobbler. And he's running in circles out
like me.
In a 20-yard circle. So I ran out there. I got to get this done. It's his first one. How am I going to make this happen? So I start out of this $10,000 funny home video thing going on here, if we'd had a camera. So I'm chasing this gobbler. Well, halfway around his 20-yard circle, I can't catch him. I'm thinking, you know, this is back when my knees were better. I was a running back. I can catch this thing. Nope. So I just stop, and I'm thinking, well, surely if he keeps the same path, he's going to come right to me. Here he comes. And then I'm thinking at the last second, what am I really going to do when I get on this thing? So I jump on this bird and tackle him to the ground. I get him pinned down to the ground, and his wing is beating me in the head, and I'm taking shots like Mike Tyson's nailing me.
Meanwhile, Mike's just...
Yeah, I'm hearing in the back, he's shot. Only 20 yards from me, and I'm hearing, he's just laughing and laughing and laughing, and this wing's hitting me. So I finally get the wing pinned down, and then the spur comes up and nails me right between the eyes.
Ooh.
And laid me open. I mean, I was bleeding like a stuck pig, just dripping off my chin, bleeding so bad where it nailed me between the eyes. But I didn't know it in the heat of the moment, with everything going on. And I knew it hurt, but I didn't know he really laid
it
me open.
To make you mad enough
I
to
just
hold
said,
on
that's it. And I just started Kamala butt slamming him with my elbow to the head. I was just wailing on him, just wham, wham, wham. Okay, finally he quits moving. He's done.
I wish you were filming this episode, by the way.
So, I wish I was, too.
He's over here just laughing and laughing, and I stand up, and I said, good job, Dad. Yeah. He's just carrying on. So I'm walking back to him. He says, man, he laid you open. You got blood pouring out of you. And I kind of reached my hand up and sure was. And then we heard some leaves rustling, and here come Jeff, my brother. Jeff was hunting.
You guys need a shell?
Jeff was hunting about 50 yards behind us, watching the opposite direction in another field in case one, you know, circled or something. So he comes walking up, and he said, what in the hell is going on around here? And you guys got a problem killing a bird? I said, he can't hit nothing. And I'm over here trying to tackle this thing. And Jeff says, well, do you want me to kill him or not? And I spun around and looked, and that gobbler was back on his feet, dragging his right leg, trying to, with his head, I broke his neck.
Yeah, I'm thinking about WrestleMania, this wrestler, like dragging himself over to the corner.
His head was hanging down like this, and he's dragging his right foot, just slipping away from us. He's out to 32. Finally 33. I mean, he ain't moving very fast. Yeah. And Dad said, yeah, kill him. So Jeff puts him out. Well, that's Dad's first turkey. Well, my whole point to all this rabbit hole is I cannot believe how tough,
turkeys
how strong
are.
And tough them turkeys are. And whatever got in my pen tore this thing to pieces. It didn't just kill it and drag it off and eat it. It was tore apart. So I don't know if you guys think that was Yodis or what.
Well, I wouldn't think that'd be a bobcat. Bobcats, I don't think they tear it up like that.
Yeah, and this is only about 40 yards from the house. I mean, we have quite a bit of human activity right there.
Right. So, I mean, I would think either a fox or a coyote, one of the two.
The only thing that almost makes me think coyote over fox is the fact that it seems like a lot of the meat's gone.
Yeah.
Seems like foxes.
Might be more than one coyote.
Could be.
That's what I'm wondering.
Could be.
And they'll come right. I've got a guy property that I've been hunting this year that we've killed, three or four dogs off of, and they come right up to his back door.
Yeah, they tried to get
really?
Yeah, they tried to get his little dogs and stuff when his wife was standing right there in front of him.
I was telling you last night, I had one, like, it was outside of my bedroom window, probably 30 yards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, they're not – being around a house is not something that intimidates them if they're hungry.
Right.
And it is about that time where they are a little bit more aggressive with food because –
pups should be hitting the ground about.
Yeah, they're denning. They've been busy with the breeding season, so sometimes, you know, kind of like with the rut with deer, they run down. They probably run themselves down a little bit.
And, hungry then, yeah. Coming out of winter, nothing's spring-wise, nothing's quite born just yet.
Yeah, but.
So they're hungry.
The thing that about coyote hunting that is different than, you know, turkey hunting or even deer hunting or elk hunting with us is it's different when you're trying to call in a predator who is smarter than any of those other animals out there. You know, it's you can actually watch a coyote think, you know, put thoughts together, two and two. And then you can also watch them never do that again.
Right.
You know, once you've taught them what not to do, which is what's making coyote hunting harder, it is becoming a more popular sport, which is awesome. And the more hunters that are out there, naturally, the more educating
they're going to get. Yeah.
That they're going to get because you know, not everybody's going to be successful, including us. And then they just get smarter and smarter. And man, this has been probably our toughest year as a group.
Yeah.
In general, from night to day hunting, all of it.
It's got a lot. I mean, really popular around, and it's getting the coyotes are getting smart, man. In my opinion,
they're not dumb.
I'm watching them play the wind harder and harder. I'm watching them be more timid. They're submissive. They're not aggressive. Like it seems to be changing.
Yeah, but I will say this summer.
Yeah, John Collins. There's always like a reset. Mm-hmm. He says there it was a one or two resets
what
a year.
Think about those pups start getting out of the den.
So
they become pretty protective when pups are out.
Yeah. So
and
after turkey season, we'll have to go out sometime this summer.
Yeah.
Well, when you're going to our place, then.
Yeah.
Well, we can do it.
We'll hit a few spots.
May 1st.
We'll try it. We'll get you on your first dog.
Well, no, May 5th.
Well, he's already been on a dog.
Turkey season goes to
May
5th.
Well, I'm just saying, right? We'll get him his first dog.
Yeah. Well, they're, like I say, I'm 0 for. Yeah, I got bit right off the bat. Now, then I've hunted behind my house. Well, that night of that tournament, that we ended at my house because you got to be check-in is 7.
It was pretty quick.
7 o'clock, so we ended the hunt at my place because it's, close to make it. And so I did the same thing I did in the morning, and it worked again. We just didn't see him.
Yeah,
heard him.
The whole pack come in. To me, it sounded like between 4 and 6.
Mm-hmm.
My buddy thought it was like 10. I don't know how many it was. Well, it was hollering, but I know it was more than 2.
Right. Yep.
I could tell that. But the whole pack come in, and they were just screaming at us.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say 100 yards, and we were losing light.
Mm-hmm.
And we just could not see them. And it worked
a lot
again.
Of times they won't break that barrier, too, for you to – they know when, like, when you can and can't see, they won't come through that field. They won't come through that
right.
Gap.
I mean, they were just right there, and we were out of time anyway, but it got dark on us there. But it worked there. And then I tried another 6 or 7 times behind the house. So they're well educated behind the house. And tonight, there's 2 packs, a pack on the backside and a pack just on the other side of the gravel road. And they start every single night in the same spot.
Yep.
Dens are right now.
When they do their first holler. So tonight, right before I left to come here, Adela and her boyfriend Gavin was standing right next to me, and one ripped right there by the gravel road. They have to have a den there, like you say, if it's consistently in the same spot.
Mm-hmm.
But he let out a long, or she did, but just a long howl. And I said, listen, there's going to be a gobbler go off. And then about that time, he howled again, and boom. Called it, went off. So gobbler went off 3 or 4 times. That other pack started in to answer it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 1 to 2 minutes difference between that and the other one started in. When that other pack started in, another gobbler started going off. So great locator calls.
Yeah, thank you, coyotes.
Right, them are great locator calls. This time of year for turkeys.
Yeah, because you're no longer worried about coyotes at the moment.
No, I'm in turkey mode right now.
You're in turkey mode.
Big time.
Did you take anybody youth hunting this over the weekend?
No.
Well, that makes 2 of us.
I wanted to.
Yeah.
It was a mistake. So, Johnny and Bo are my nephews. And
oh, I saw all them pictures.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So, I love
to text Jeff.
I love to take Johnny and Bo. I mean, we're talking about a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old here, so... And I got them to eat sardines last year in the blind. I mean, but no, we booked a weekend run to Bennett Springs trout fishing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just to break the camper in, you know, de-winterize it. What did you it's a close trip. What did we forget? Mm-hmm. What did we not pack? You know how that goes. So we done paid for the campsites and everything. And, oh, man. That's youth season.
Yep.
So, yeah, and we already had it paid for and all that. So I didn't go with Johnny and Bo, and boy, did they connect on a couple birds.
Awesome.
Man, they landed in the decoys. And
both got one.
Really? Both of them got them.
Same time? So, like, within
30 seconds of each other.
Really?
Bam, bam.
That's awesome.
Bam, bam. Yeah. Yeah. They shot a gobbler, and it's flopping. Bo did. And then the other gobbler started trying to whip the gobbler that's flopping. Mm-hmm. And then that's when they got the second gobbler. So there's a lot of action.
That's pretty cool.
I cannot beat that.
No, you can't beat that at all.
Yeah. Okay, so season starts. Let's see. This show will come out
Monday after, won't it? Or the Tuesday after, I mean?
Tomorrow the 9th. The show will come out the 16th.
So, yeah. Because it starts the 15th. Season starts the 15th,
okay.
Correct?
Monday is the 15th?
Monday the 15th.
Yeah. Monday
it'll come out Tuesday?
So this show will come out Tuesday morning.
Right. I've already had some guys wanting to know if it's going to – so they can listen.
Listen to on Tuesday morning.
Tuesday morning. Yeah, they were asking me. And
yeah,
I said
we actually – we're recording this on Monday night.
So we're teasing them here. We're making them go this long without talking about turkey.
Well, and it's my fault. But we're recording this on a Monday night. And if I send it in to our network now – it won't come out tomorrow morning. It'll come out tomorrow at some point.
That's fine.
So I decided we're going to release another classic episode in the middle of the two Scott shows, and then Scott will hit Tuesday. So This is a teaser. You're going to get a, well, people already heard it by now, but there's going to be a shed hunting episode in the middle of these two, and which is an awesome show. And then Scott will come out the Tuesday
after season.
Yeah. Right after season opens.
Yeah, they just thought it'd be cool to on their drive to their turkey hunting spot to listen to
one of the other Scott podcasts, shows this time.
So that, yeah.
It's been a busy time in the Thomas household and the Humfeld and Winstead household. So it's we've kind of missed a little bit as far as live new shows.
Yeah.
So anyway, outside of season starting, you also did some awesome stuff from the calling side. I already talked to you about one, but the listeners don't know about it. You went to the NWTF convention.
Yes. Yep, down there at the Nashville.
Yep, and competed in the same thing you've been competing in for years. And got yourself a top 10 finish, didn't you?
Yeah. Yep, finally made the 10.
Ah, damn.
Not 9, but I did make 10. So. Hey.
10 is 10.
We're in there. So, yeah. And with a 3-point spread, I mean, it was tight. You know, 3 points put you in fifth place, which is on stage with a trophy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was pretty good. And I think it was 11th or 12th place. It starts dropping off the charts fast. But, yeah, I got in there pretty good this year, had a good run. And then we went to Iowa and got in the Owl Hooting contest there in Iowa. And took first in Iowa and then in Al Hooten in third place in the Friction box call division. So
dang.
It was a good run this year. In Missouri, I missed it. We had some sick kids. So
yep.
Yeah,
I heard about the appendix story before we hit record.
We had decided to have an appendix taken out. So
yeah.
Which was a good move. I'm glad we didn't go. You know, we didn't know how sick she really was. But, yeah, it was – I had an appendix go out. So.
Yeah. Sick enough to remove a body part.
Right, right. And all is good. She's bounced back and being a normal 11-year-old now. So.
Good.
Yep. Good. Well, that's awesome. That was cool. I mean, I already knew about Nashville. We had talked about it already. But I hadn't talked to you since Iowa because we were thinking about trying to go up there, and then we ended up not.
Yeah.
But
the show's expanded big time now.
It's big. I mean, I'm –
we went that one year. It was a good time.
It might be bigger than ATA.
Oh, it's definitely bigger than ATA.
Yeah,
I bet you. I would bet it's probably bigger, the biggest show out there, I would assume.
Well, biggest show.
That Western Expo is pretty bigger. The SHOT Show is pretty big now, too.
Yeah. NWTF is probably bigger than it, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, the NWTF's monstrous.
The Pennsylvania one is huge. The Great American Outdoor Show.
Pennsylvania's number one.
Is it?
Is what they told me. In Nashville, they told me that. And then the Nashville's number two.
Yeah.
There was 70, they broke a record this year, 76,000 people in 3 days in Nashville. At that show.
I mean, I'm pretty sure I'd get my wife to go to Nashville pretty easy.
I'm going to say, like, you know how we normally got one showing us a year between the three of us? I think it's either Nashville or SHOT Show.
SHOT Show or Nashville for me.
Yeah, because SHOT Show's Vegas.
Yeah, I'd like to go to SHOT Show.
Nashville is,
I have a better chance to get my wife to Nashville than I do Vegas, though.
Yeah, because Nashville, we can drive there.
The Gaylord Opera Center.
I'm sure about that.
Right, 8 hours. You're there in 8 hours.
Ain't bad.
From here, anyway.
Right.
But the Gaylord Opera Center is, I mean, that's my wife and kids, and I like it too. I mean, yeah, I'm going to go in there and to the booths and stuff, obviously, but they've got walking. It's 50 acres under roof with a river going through the inside of the hotel. You take a boat ride. There's catfish swimming underneath of you.
Oh, God. Caden would have his.
Think we can shoot him with a bow?
Caden would have his reel.
I was done trying to rent a pole, too. Yeah, fishing pole. Where do you rent poles?
What's Tennessee's rules on shooting catfish?
Yeah,
inside a hotel.
Sir, this is a Wendy's.
They have real trees growing. I mean, there's 70,000 or 68,000, something like that, crazy. It's
across the parking lot from Grand Ole Opry, right?
Panes of glass up there. Yes.
Yeah.
And the mall, I don't know what the mall, Monster Shopping Mall is right there, walking distance. There's half-mile walking trails inside of there. They're in restaurants. You could spend an entire weekend and never leave the Gaylord Opera Center.
Yeah.
Really?
It's that fun. Murals painted all over the wall. And, you know, that only include the turkey show that's going on that's attached to it.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So,
well, and I was talking to our buddy Paul Campbell with the O2 podcast, who is also, gosh, I forgot the turkey podcast he hosts. It's not How to Hunt Turkey. It's another one. But Turkey Hunter, Turkey Season podcast. I think I'm right. Anyway, Paul works for NWTF, and he's down there this year. And we talked to him after he was there, and he said it's the biggest he's seen, and it's not just turkey, you know.
Right.
It's all, you know, outdoor
related
stuff. I mean, obviously it's a turkey convention.
I would say 60% of it's turkey.
Sure. Yeah, but he said it's getting real big. And then we're like, did you stop in and see Scott? I feel like you two need to meet.
Yeah, that would be a good matchup.
Oh, my gosh.
Who?
His name's Paul Campbell. He's with NWTF, and he is a freak when it comes to turkeys.
Yeah, I
mean, loves turkey.
That's his bread and butter.
Yeah, that's all he talks about all the time.
Right.
And
I guess I don't know him.
I was like, you need to get a call from Scott. And I said, he makes calls, and the best, and he's a call aficionado. He wants, you know, he collects them more than anything.
Right.
And I'm like, well, there's one in Missouri you need to.
Right.
Because it's a work of art. I've got three of them sitting right there. You brought one.
This one's headed to Alabama.
I think I got a couple of them now.
I got one.
That one's going to Alabama.
Is that Bloodwood on?
Ooh, look at this guy go.
The only reason he knows that is because he called that Bloodwood earlier.
I have a Bloodwood one. That's why.
Yeah, okay.
Bloodwood on Maple? I don't know.
No, here in the ballpark. It is American. The bottom half.
Walnut.
No, Walnut's
too dark. Yeah.
It's Bloodwood over American Cherry.
Yeah, so, I would have said that. I would have guessed that third.
I would have, I would have had it.
Yeah.
Looks good.
You had me going there. I was like, man, Nate's hiking.
Oh, dude, Scott's eyes lit up whenever Nate says that Bloodwood.
He knows it?
Blood was the easy one because it looks like.
Yeah.
It's dark.
It looks like blood. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, shit.
He had me going there.
He had me at hello.
Yeah.
But so how excited are you for season? Are you like, do you have high hopes?
Yes. I'm after a particular gobbler that beat me but didn't beat me, if that makes any sense. He's triple bearded.
Ooh.
We got a record book bird here.
Yeah.
You know, 11-inch, 11.5-inch. You know, I can't tell you all that, but I can tell you there's three beards, and all three of them are over 10 inches long.
Jesus.
Wow.
You know, whether the 11, 11.5, doesn't matter. We've got a 10-inch beard, 10-inch beard, 10-inch beard plus. And his spurs were 1.375 guessing last year, hooking up like a rooster. So he's and he waddles when he walks. I mean, he's a 25-pounder.
How old do you reckon he is?
He's 4. We'll be 5. I think he'll be a 5-year-old bird now.
Mm. How do you age a turkey?
Spurs.
Spurs.
So many people think it's by weight, or it's by, he'd had a 13-inch beard. You know, he's got to be, beard is the last thing to guess him off of.
Yeah, everybody's got different lengths, you know what I'm saying?
You know.
Angle the dangle.
I can't, he's not even 3.
Legal.
And I said...
Sorry.
Yeah,
it's illegal for a grown bird to hurt a little bird's beard.
So, do they just grow?
It's a 30-pound bird with a 2-inch beard.
Okay, it's over.
I've killed one.
He's a
like
grower,
that.
Not a shower.
Penis joke.
Yeah, he weighed 25 pounds and had 1.5-inch beard. It was orange.
Oh, really? Yep. Welcome to my life.
It had a deficiency.
It happens. It happens.
They make pills for that.
Yeah.
So what makes it that you can tell off of a spur? Do they just guaranteed to grow so much a year sort of thing, or
right.
What?
Girth. Right. The older you get, the longer the spur. Now, you know, in rocky areas – you know, they're jumping off rocks and stuff like that.
Wears them down, probably.
They can be worn down or even broken.
Yeah.
I mean, I've killed a bird that had 1.5-inch spur, and the other spur was 1-inch.
Mm-hmm.
And it just totally broke off and dull. So, but they continue to grow, you know, longer and longer. But beards grow, they're like fingernails. It's made out of keratin. Keratin, if I'm saying that right. It's like your fingernails.
I wouldn't know if you were not.
No. So they continue to grow all the time, their beards do, but you got to think when they're walking through the brush and when they're flying in and out of the trees every single night, their beards are getting broke.
Yeah,
all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you never judge them by their beard length. And usually a 2-year-old bird will have a 12-inch beard, 11.5, 13-inch beard. He ain't been on earth very long.
Yeah. He hadn't had much wear and tear
like
on
a
it.
4-year-old, think how many times he's been in out of the tree, right?
Pulled so, it out.
Yeah, and weight has nothing to do with it.
I mean, that just depends on everything surrounding him, you know.
A 22.5, 23-pound gobbler in Alabama is a giant.
Right.
You know, and a 23-pounder up here is a good bird, too. But you see a lot of 24 and 25s and some 26s. It all depends on the area they're in, how much they got to eat, how big is the salad bar, you know.
Right.
So, spurs is how you judge them, you know, 3/4 inch and plus or minus a little bit there is a 2-year-old. Okay. You know, they'll have little bumps on their leg. That's a Jake. A 1-inch spur could be a 2-year-old, but definitely 1.125, 1.375 is a 3-year-old. Your 4-year-old birds are 1.25 to 1.375 range. So anything 1.5 and more is your 5-year-old.
The longest spur you've killed?
1.625. And the other one was 1.5. Damn. So, you know, he probably busted a tip off or something somewhere. But, yeah, he was definitely a 5-year-old. Could have been a 6-year-old bird. So, but that's how you judge.
And they don't really get much older than that, do they?
No. It's just they can.
Lifespan, yeah.
They can. I mean, I'm not going to say the guy's name. But he had a wild turkey and lived 14 years.
Damn.
In like a controlled environment? Or it was in the wild?
Yes,
watching it.
That is true. Good one there. It was in a controlled environment.
Yeah.
you know.
So without predators, it could live up to 14.
It lived 14 years, and the last 2 years, they had to put a diaper on it. They had this thing trained like dog.
Yes. Diaper on a turkey.
So it was pretty much domestic by the time it was all done.
But it was a wild turkey, and, you know, you know conservation, they've got it all. You're supposed to leave them.
Yeah.
But the misses of the property felt bad.
Yeah.
Let's take it in. Oh, well, yeah. Next thing you know, 14 years later, this thing's still living. And they got a diaper on it, and it sits next to him and watches TV.
Oh, my God.
That's,
cool.
That's pretty cool.
So I can tell you they do live 14 years. But, yeah, controlled environment.
Right.
Most of the time, a 5-6-year-old turkey is you're getting rare.
Not as good as you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's just too many predators.
Yeah.
That, you know, they're trying to get – everything's trying to eat a turkey egg or a turkey from the day they're born.
Right.
You got weather, you got predators, you got all kinds of stuff there.
Oh, it goes on and on. Yeah.
Which is why the population can be very volatile, right? I mean, they've got a short – what?
Go ahead. I just thought of two topics I want to ask God his opinion on.
You just like literally –
third one, actually.
His eyes just lit up.
I got three questions, yeah.
Like, you know, their lifespan's so short.
Right.
In the grand scheme of things, I'm like, compare it to a whitetail. A whitetail can live 10, 12 years. I mean, most of them don't because of us hunters, but, I mean, they can. Whereas a turkey, 5 years is about the max about they can make in the wild. And
the
then,
old Yodi finally gets them. You know,
coon, you know, I mean, I remember you telling us for the first time, you know, raccoons, probably the biggest issue with turkeys is they're nest raiders.
Yeah.
And, you know, if the eggs can't hatch, then we can't have poults, and those poults don't turn into female and male turkeys.
Get your tags and kill every raccoon you can during season. Every one of them. You want to help your turkey population?
I really do think
And they need to open those damn things up for thermal.
Because you have to wait till thermal, and then August 1st.
Yeah.
You like right now, you're not supposed to kill a turkey.
I don't.
Turkey, but a raccoon.
Yeah.
August 1st, you can start killing them again.
I do not get that.
They did so much damage to my dad's cornfield last year. It was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And I went out, and when it was like late August, and started calling them. I think I'm going to do that pretty hard this year, actually. Just
call them in?
Call them.
Yeah.
It was fun when I did it.
Yeah.
And it was serving a purpose because, I mean, they did so much damage. It was ridiculous. But, yeah, we need to do some, instead of raccoon population, or instead of coyote control, some raccoon control.
I feel like the conservation needs to loosen the reins a little bit when it comes
raccoons.
To yeah.
Know, like, why are we so worried about raccoons?
When you go thermal hunting, you see 15.
That's what I was going to say. Climb a tree.
Y'all told me last year, you could lit the thermal up, and you could just see coon, you know, the eye shine everywhere.
Yeah. It's like Christmas trees. When you start howling, they chirp right up trees, and you're like, gosh, there's 13 of them right there.
Mm-hmm.
And can't touch them.
Nope.
But, you know, kill the. I just don't understand why.
The topics, though. I don't want to forget
these
questions.
If people could see this, Andy, like, because pulls his head, like, oh, I just thought of something.
Because I've been saving these questions for this episode. I knew we'd have Scott on some point. But you travel quite a bit. You go to Kansas every year to hunt turkey.
A lot of times, yes.
Kansas, if I'm not mistaken, canceled turkey season this year. Is that right?
I don't think they. Well, fall.
Was it just fall season?
Fall season canceled, but most of Kansas is one. It's not true all over Kansas, but most of Kansas is now one bird only.
All year long, fall and spring, or just spring?
Just spring. Spring, instead of two birds, is cut back to one bird, and then they cut out fall season too.
Gotcha.
Yeah, their population has dropped tremendously.
So what's your opinion on Missouri going to –
Quick Google. Due to decline in the resident turkey population, the current statewide permit bag limit for turkey in Kansas is one bird.
I like that.
According to the 23-24 Kansas Hunting and Fur Harvesting Guide, no game tags are available for another bird for the spring 2024 season. It doesn't say anything about fall, but I'm assuming, like you were saying.
I like that.
Kansas limits spring turkey season after fall cancellation.
So that's what I read, I'm sure. Yep. It was probably something on fall, and I just assumed it was spring, too, because I don't go there, so I didn't look too much into it.
Oh, we talked to that guy at the Athlon thing. He was saying that. Yeah, oh, okay. That is right.
So what's your opinion with Kansas shutting that down, Missouri, I feel like, opened theirs up farther by going to private land you can hunt all day.
All day, uh-huh.
What's your opinion on that?
hunting all day. Well,
I can tell you what I would have liked to seen. I would have liked to seen them go to one bird all day. That's what I would have liked to see.
Our population has dropped quite a bit also.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not seeing, and I think there's a factor in here that people are missing. I talked to a guy in Alabama and in Tennessee. He's seen it in Tennessee also, but yeah, Missouri has dropped, and it could be due to weather. Kansas, I believe, is predators. Weather is big time, especially north of I-70. They've been getting crazy weather in the spring. The drier, the better. You know,
and well, like you said, when we're drastic, so we're dry, but there for a while, if you got rain, it was 7 inches at a time.
Exactly.
And then, and so then your nesting and all that stuff's coming. I mean, they're getting drowned out and everything else.
Flooded out, drowned out. And a wet turkey isn't any different than a wet dog. They stink.
Yeah.
Predators can smell them.
I didn't think about that part of it.
They can smell them farther away.
Yeah.
A wet turkey's no different than a wet dog. It's horrible.
And Missouri did do a little, like in the fall now, instead of just getting free turkey tags with your deer tag,
you have to
buy them now, which I don't understand why we don't just cancel fall season if we're really trying to keep turkeys from dying. Well, but I don't think fall kills that many turkeys. Fall season I don't think is that popular that it's going to have that.
I don't remember the number. I think it was 12,000.
It's not much. Yeah.
12 or 14,000 statewide was killed in the fall.
Yeah. But, yeah, like, why not just one bird, you know? And
But hens are legal. I mean, if you want to keep fall, keep it at gobblers. Hens were legal in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Without the hens, they're the ones laying 12 to 15 eggs on the nest.
Right.
You know, and you just took out a potential
12 to 15
nest that could have hatched.
Yeah, you only need one man. You only need one boy to handle business.
But, 12, 14 eggs is taken out of the game there.
Yeah.
But, hunting all day, I don't know if I'm in or out on that. I think they're going to get – people are going to ruin their farms.
Oh.
Pushing birds off. Let's go for an evening hunt real quick. Well, in the morning, think about it, guys.
Then you can't understand why they're not there in the morning.
In the morning, you've got the cover of darkness. That's why you owl hoot. All right. We got about 10 minutes before it's daylight. Let's make our move. They can't see you. But let's go for an evening hunt. You jump out of the truck and you walk across that wide open field. Their vision's 10 times better than ours. Take 10 power binoculars. They're going to see you coming before you
from a mile away.
From a mile out. Unless you know if you know where their roost site, generally turkeys roost in the same location, sometimes the same tree.
Mm-hmm.
That little area, that's their little 50-yard roost area. If you can get to that roost area 2 hours before dark without being seen, that's the key. It's going to be game time because they got to get to a tree before dark.
Right.
They are going to be in that tree. They are not going to sit on that ground.
Yeah.
So you already got a couple things going for you. You're going to be calling turkeys in the direction that they want to go anyway.
They're going anyway.
Right. So whether you're not going to be right where they want to fly up, but close enough they give you a little drive-by to check you out, whether in range before they go up. But the key is getting set up in that spot without getting busted.
Yeah.
And I just know people are going to get out of their trucks.
Oh, for sure.
We get to hunt evenings now, and they're going to plow through their land, and they're going to just push birds away.
Yeah. And me, personally, I like it because selfishly, if I were to hunt, I'm more apt to be able to go in the afternoons because typically we got stuff going on in the mornings.
Right.
So I'm like,
hey. You should be done by 8 o'clock.
You're talking to the world's worst turkey hunter.
I don't know. I'm right there with you.
I literally had a bird at 10 yards for my son, and it didn't die. It can't get much worse than that. You heard the story.
Yeah.
And so, like, for me, I'm like, well, that's kind of nice because I can go if,
It opens up a few windows.
Although, I did see a video you posted there. There is a turkey there now, but it's just like, at least there's that opportunity now.
Yeah.
Where before,
I can't go these two mornings this weekend. I guess I'm not going at all.
And it's a good thing. I mean, I'm not against it. I'm just telling anybody that's listening to us right now.
Yeah.
Hide behind the cedar trees on your way in. Get in the ditch. Get in the creek. Just don't nonchalantly walk across the field in the wide open. And do your homework. You should know, you know, if you own the farm, rent the farm, you've been there enough, you should kind of know where they roost. Mm-hmm. Figure a way out to get there without getting busted. Or you can totally ruin your farm. And your neighbors are going to have a heyday the next morning. Think about it, guys. Yeah. I mean, seriously, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah,
I'm not against it, but it's going to make it interesting. I know that for sure.
But you don't think necessarily more birds are going to die because of it?
No.
No.
I wish they would have went to a one-bird season also.
Same. See, my theory on this all-day hunting is this, and I wish Missouri would have done it a long time ago. Kansas, you get to hunt for 5 weeks.
Yeah.
You were allowed two birds. Now they've cut it back to one.
Mm-hmm.
But point being, 5 weeks, two birds. There's a lot of states that 6 weeks, two birds. You know, Missouri's 3 weeks, two birds. If you can only kill two birds, what does it matter whether if it's 3 weeks or 6 weeks or all day hunting? You can still only kill two birds.
Two, right.
The conservationists have got this figured out on how many birds we can harvest to keep the population up. So whether you're going all day long or you're going 6 weeks or 3 weeks, so I don't think all day long is going to do anything different.
But your hunters are going to hunt.
They're going to hunt, right.
There's only X amount of people out there chasing them.
Whether you got all day hunting or you got 3 weeks or 6 weeks, so I don't think that'll change. But I think some birds are going to be boogered. People are going to blow them out, you know, and ruin their property, and the neighbor's going to have a blast the next day. That's the key to that.
Mm-hmm.
I do have one farm I'm excited a little bit to try the all-day hunt, because I can tell you for the last 4 or 5 years, middle of the day, they go out to this one ridge, and they're there at probably 2, 3, 4 o'clock, and like you said, they go back down to their trees later.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're 100% killable.
That's what I'm talking about. See, you already know where they're going to be in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, get into that area a different way.
Right.
Are you talking about the same place?
No.
That I'm talking about?
Uh-huh.
See, I'm talking about the place you, me, and Caden went.
Yep.
And if you pay it, I mean, you've paid attention to that place obviously more than me.
You got a 50-50 shot of where they're going to be on that place.
They are, you know, when that winter flock is still kind of there.
Mm-hmm.
We know where they're roosting almost every night. And obviously those two straight mornings, you know, we saw them in there that one morning. It was the first time I think we'd ever hunted it. We walked right underneath them, not knowing where they had roosted. And then we're just like, oh, my gosh.
They're
literally right there. And that was fun, though. Gosh, Caden was so jacked up, you know. And then, they flew down opposite of where we went. And then I took him back the next morning, and that's when I think –
He came down that fence line,
yeah, and came to 10 yards, and just the boy couldn't hold the gun up. Yeah. But so, like, a place like that, you're like, hey, they are likely going to come back right here.
Right.
Right.
And you can access that without them knowing you're there, too.
Yeah. That's the advantage to it.
Yeah. So, you know, a place like that, you're like, hey, I can see where this would be successful.
Exactly.
Or could potentially be successful.
Just don't blow it out.
Right.
That's the thing. And
I wonder how many days it comes, like, it would take them to come back to that area once you bump them out of that area.
If you booger them.
It could be weeks. You know, it's not going to be the next day usually.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, turkeys are, you expect the unexpected.
Right.
You know, just when you think you got them figured out, you don't.
I'll make that pile of corn big enough, though.
Right, exactly.
Mine was better.
That's
okay, Scooby.
But another thing too, I want to say tip wise to everybody listening about this is leaving. Don't leave until it is completely dark.
Yeah,
like I can barely see the hand in front of my face, because you know they can pick up on you that way. If it didn't work out, they were just out of range and they went ahead and roosted right behind you. You know. Don't be on your phone,
mm-hmm.
and you know, get out of there when it's completely dark. Go in, leave quietly, completely dark, because you know, they'll leave the next morning off, you know, too, and pick up on that. It just, you can bust. They had a study. I don't remember what magazine I read this in, but they radio collared half a dozen gobblers on public land, and they kind of knew where on the map, you know, it was a couple thousand acres. These half a dozen gobblers would roost in the same
vicinity,
50-yard, 100-yard little circle. That was their roost site, all six of them. And they, you know, pinged them every day of opening, from opening day on public ground, because, you know, the hunters were hitting this area hard. So day one, the gobblers were spooked and bumped. One of them did die. And then, like, five of them moved 100 yards back farther. Was still on public ground.
Right.
But as fast as day three, the other remaining five gobblers were a half a mile to a mile off of public ground roosting at the neighbors.
No shit.
Private. On private. Right. Just that fast.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as far as hunting in the evening, yeah, it'd be fun, but be careful.
You got to think, like, they just like you said earlier, they got everything trying to kill them. You give them one chance to feel uncomfortable somewhere, they're going to take it. Well, they're not going to, you know, throw caution to the wind and be like, oh, let's go be stupid.
I think I'm fine, but it makes me wonder. The other day I went out and I put a food plot in weekend before last. And we got a decent rain, so I went out to check, see if anything was coming. I got a little clover starting to pop through.
A little germination.
And I was walking, like, man. I was like, at first I was like, looks like a scrape. And I started looking. I was like, oh, they're dusting. I found about four or five spots where birds have been dusting right on the edge of the field. I started looking. I was like, that's pretty cool. I walked about five steps. I looked up and went, oh, shit. There they went. About, I think there's at least four of them took off into the timber. And I started like, man, I wonder how long it'd be before they come back to that area. You know, because I was just walking. I kind of walked. I was looking for sheds and just kind of checking things out. We had some wind and stuff. I had some trees down, making sure before I planted, you know, field edges were clean. And so I was kind of curious. I said, I wonder how long I just bumped them out of this corner.
They won't go too far like that.
Like sometimes they know that you weren't. I
just kept walking nonchalantly. Yeah. Like I wasn't, you know.
All right, that's the best thing. It's like a tractor.
Yeah.
Around deer, you know, farmers are out harvesting and all that, and they bump them deer. Mm-hmm. They're right back too. You know, it's kind of different. So something like that. I mean, there's people that are mushroom hunting in the woods all the time too. You know, depending on the situation or how close to. If you're in an area where turkeys haven't seen a human for a year,
a little different reaction.
Well, it's going to be a little different reaction, and they're seeing activity all the time.
Right. You know? That's a good point, because I was just there the weekend before, like I said, and I was 50 yards from where I just put that food plot in.
So exactly. Yep.
I was there several hours.
There's still hope.
Hypothetically speaking, you know, you mentioned taking youth hunters. If you had a youth hunter or a person who's just really bad and you're setting up a decoy setting, what's your idea? What's your decoy setting look like when you're setting up an area with a blind?
With a youth hunter.
Sure.
Or just a really bad hunter.
Somebody needs something really close.
Youth mentality.
Let's call it a youth hunter.
His name might be Andy. Nate. It could go for all of us.
I usually just take a hen, if I'm taking anything at all. Half my kills have been with no decoys. And the other half, I have it with one hen maybe. The big Tom, you know, Johnny and Bo youth hunting last weekend, they had a big Tom strutter. It's a perfect example, decoy wise. So the first bird that flew out of the tree was a gobbler, seen that strutting Tom, and then hung around for a couple minutes out of range, but left. Didn't want nothing to do with it. We're talking about an adult bird, 20-pound plus, 10-inch beard. Who knows about the spurs? I'm guessing they were probably a two-year-old, three-quarter-inch, 7/8 type spurs. Well, he's had his rear end whipped in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I was just trying to look for a quick hen here, and here is a strutter I didn't.
Someone beat me to it.
And he left the scene.
Yeah.
So I don't like to use them, but, I mean, they can work too. Mm-hmm. So the other two gobblers that flew out of the tree were also three. They were both three-year-olds because they both had inch and eighth spurs.
Mm-hmm.
But two on one.
Yeah.
You like see my point here? Mm-hmm. Hey, buddy, I think we can take this guy. You know, two on one here. Both them birds flew down, come from the other side of the field, flew down, seen that strut and Tom, and Jeff laid out a few yelps, and here they come on a string. Well, they weren't coming in for the hen. They're coming in to fight,
whip his ass.
To whoop him, because two are going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have a pecking order here. They established that a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I seen some fighting there. I bet I seen 10, 11 gobblers, maybe 12 gobblers, 10 to 12 gobblers. No, I just happened to be driving by. They were up in the air, just waylaying on each other with their spurs.
That is cool to watch.
I slammed on the brakes. I said, I wonder who owns this. I need to. I got to get the Onyx map out.
Some asshole.
Yeah.
There's birds there. But they were establishing that weeks ago.
Back in order.
Yeah. Right.
That's what. So it seems like they're active right now. I mean, I seen just at my house, I had one. There was a hen and a gobbler. She kind of bebopped down towards the woods, and he was, I don't know, 30, 40 yards behind her, just working in the field down. I mean, is that. I feel like it's a little early, but maybe not. I mean, it's youth season, so maybe that's still the right time for them to get fired up. I don't know. But
oh, yeah. Yeah.
They are fired up, and they're active morning, right now for sure.
I was driving down I-70, and just off there in one of the winter wheat fields, you know, there was a group of them, and there was two of them out there strutting. I mean, it was gorgeous to look at. It was a cool scene. Yeah. But
when you if you're on your farm and you know for a fact you see them, you've been seeing them quite often where there's two birds together a lot,
mm-hmm.
a lot of times, and they seem like they're together all the time. Well, a Tom decoy is a great setup in front of a blind.
Get him jealous of
the two-on-one, we'll do it.
Right.
You know, one Jake by himself, that works really well.
Okay.
Because even, a single, a double Tom, we're going to come into the Jake very easily.
Right.
But I like to use a Jake more than I would a big strutting Tom because even if the gobbler is, a three-year-old,
mm-hmm.
by himself, he doesn't have a buddy. Well, I can take the little Jake.
Right.
So you're upping your chances a little bit better.
That makes sense.
But in an area where you have a lot of gobbler fighting, I think a Jake would work awesome, especially if that's the property you're on. I would be running a Jake and a hen. I would put the hen down on the ground.
We'll have to give me a Jake. I have a hen, and normally I just throw out a solo hen is what I always do.
Right.
And I've had some luck with turkey coming to it. They never come in my range, and I have missed a handful.
Put the hen down on the ground. Don't use a stake. I mean, they make breeder.
Almost like she's bedding.
She makes breeder. They make breeder decoys too, but you can just use a normal hen that but where she's on.
Yeah.
Just set her down on the ground, and then put the Jake right behind her.
Gotcha.
You know, right in their face, and they'd both be looking in the same direction.
But he's about to get all up in that.
Do you want him looking away from you or towards you? Doesn't matter.
It does. Depending on your terrain and how your blind's sitting and everything, a gobbler will approach usually from behind. They're going to come straight in, but just before they come in, they're going to circle and come in from behind.
Because that's what I was thinking about, that same way, like whitetail circle decoys.
Mm-hmm.
Right off the top of my head, I'd have to look up what it is, but I can't remember which direction they circle, but they always circle around. I'm sure downwind is part of it, but I think behind. Also.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if that was the same way you want them.
I've seen them come on, head to head and from the left and right side, but more times than not,
conceptually,
he's going to come in from the on the back side of the Jake. So if he's got his rear end to you, that's less eyeballs looking at you.
Right.
I would set the rear end of the Jake. You're looking at the rear end of the Jake.
Mm-hmm.
So when he's circling,
and about how far away do you want to set him up?
I keep mine around 25 yards. Okay. I mean, you know, most guns with today's chokes, goodness gracious, TSS, Longbeard XR, phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, you can shoot 50 yards all day long now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so there's – back in the day, you know, old school, put that decoy at 12 yards. You know, you were happy to get 10, 15 pellets in the head at 40.
Yeah.
You know, now you laugh at that. You know, I got 170 pellets in a 10-inch circle at 40 and 50 yards now. So the closer they are, the decoys to you, you know, to get them in, they're going to – eyesight's 10 times better than ours. Yeah. Put them out there a little bit. Now, I'm not saying put them out there at 40, but
– right.
Get them on out there at 25, 30 yards. That's kind of where I put mine.
So they don't. They have a less and smaller chance of busting you up because mm-hmm. they're so
right. That
close.
And hopefully they circle or whatever, and you know.
Well, and here's something to think about too. So you've got your decoy at say 15, and this has happened to me at least a dozen times. Yeah, I'm working a bird that's out here, but here comes in Mr. Silent. Comes in from your right or comes in from your left. He's going to try to sneak in. Get a piece and sneak out before the big boy even shows up. So he comes in from behind you, from your right or left, comes into the setup, and you have your decoy out at, say, 15 yards, and he comes in. Now you have a gobbler that's 10 yards in front of you.
Yeah.
With the today's chokes, I shoot a Jeb's choke. 0.655, I'm not trying to do no advertising or nothing, but Jeb's chokes are phenomenal. And there's a lot of good chokes out there. We could go on for 3 hours talking about chokes. But now, you know, they're shooting such a tight pattern. Now you got a gobbler 10, 12 yards in front of you with 350 pellets, and this is, you know, less than a baseball. You better be dead on the money.
Yeah.
The only two gobblers I've ever missed were
too
all
close.
They were both of them less than 15.
Well,
and how did I miss that? It was only 15 yards. Well, you know, just here's his head, and 300 pellets just went right beside it. And just a matter of just about 6 to 8 yards, you'll go from golf ball to a monster dinner plate.
Yeah.
In five more yards, you know, add 10 from 15, go to 25, add 10 to that. Now you're out here. With a nice shot pattern that quick. So don't put them in close. You know, get them out there at 25.
Give yourself a chance for it to expand.
Yeah, you want it to expand a little bit. So, yeah, 25 yards is a great –
need all the help we can get.
I ain't no shit.
That's a great distance, about 25 yards, you know. Say 30, whatever, but definitely not 15 like old school days, you know.
That makes sense.
I like that. I mean, my chances of being in the blind are almost zero.
I mean, for the hypothetical youth. Hunter.
Right, obviously.
Right.
All hypotheticals.
I personally, like, I like the no decoy because I like chasing the gobbles a little bit of running and gunning. Yeah. I like doing that. I'm not good at it. I am not good at turkey hunting. I like doing it because it's fun. It's exciting. That running and gunning aspect. I don't know. It's you got one gobble and you're sneaking in on it. That's a blast.
Mm-hmm.
But
it is.
And then he whoop.
Yeah.
He had an old periscope.
See ya.
Yeah, that old periscope head goes, yeah. And I like to make him. That's a good point here. We can talk about it in a minute. You know, you do have one in front of you, and he's in full strut. Yeah, last case scenario, shoot that bird. Don't let him get away. But his head is tucked in. You think about it, his chest's all puffed out and his head's all tucked in. Make a putt sound. I've even whistled at him. But if you're not good at putting, but I'll do or yelp really loud. You don't have to be a putt,
mm-hmm.
but yelp really loud at him. Just
get the head out away.
Right, and he'll just kind of come out of strut and periscope his head way up. Now you just increase the kill zone from, you know, tucked in 8 inches to 12, 14 inches of neck showing.
I didn't think about that.
He's a grower.
For sure.
Miracle grow.
Nothing.
Okay.
Just me.
But periscope that head up. Just, you know, up your chances.
Yeah.
That's a good point. All things that, I mean, I'm kind of in Andy's camp. When I go, I just like to sit on the ground, like pick a spot and
A lot of times I have a solo decoy with me. If I put it out, maybe. If I don't,
yeah,
you know, something I can grab and go real easy.
I mean, more times than not, it's gotten me in trouble, honestly. But
if I'm going to run two, I'll run a hen and a jake 90% of the time if I'm running two. But usually it's just a hen.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it, because I hunt before work. Try to get in
quick.
If I know it's not going to happen, I can get there by 8.
Yep.
Get off at 4. If I can get in there by 9, I'm off at 5.
Yeah.
Type thing. You know, we have a little flexibility there, but it's – I'll slip out of there. But running and gunning, I won't use.
Right.
I won't use a decoy at all. You know, half my birds has been no decoy. But you can't go wrong with a jake and a hen for sure.
I get me a jake. I got the hen. I got a jake.
Yeah, I just borrow stuff from Russell.
Mr. Cabela's.
He's got them nice Avian X decoys. Really beautiful. I actually had one bought, and the company, I can't remember, it was like 2 years ago, maybe like after the second time we had him on, I bought one and took my money and everything. The company sent me an email saying, sorry, we're actually out of stock, and they refunded my money. And I was like, ah, screw it. I guess I'll just borrow Russell's.
I wasn't meant to have it.
Yep. Yeah. I'm not meant to have a turkey decoy. I do have calls.
Yeah, I work for – I'm talking about running and gunning. I have a farm that there are the biggest turkey you've ever seen in your life out there. I've yet to kill one, and I've hunted there since 2014. And each year I have a chance. I usually get one chance at a decent bird out there. And I had this one. I mean, he gobbled his head off. And he started leaving. Well, I had a perfect trail mowed through the timber that I ran down. He was leaving. I ran down, got around him, started calling, and here he comes. He's coming up over this hill, and he's gobbling. I can start to see the top of his head coming up over.
Oh, your heart's thumping out of your chest,
ready.
Too.
All of a sudden he stops, starts putting, and just takes off the other way running. I'm like, what the –
he seen something, didn't he?
Two coyotes run out by 10 yards in front of me. I never unloaded a shotgun so fast. Oh,
Did you hit one of them? I killed
one and hit the other one. I never found the other one, but I killed one of them. So I about had a double that day.
Not every turkey hunt is a coyote hunt. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
No, I said
no every turkey hunt is a coyote hunt.
Not
yeah.
every coyote hunt is a turkey hunt, but every turkey hunt is a coyote hunt.
Yeah. I made me so because that bird was huge, and I finally had him coming to me. And I'm talking about I just needed him to crest this little knoll in the field, and I had him. And all of a sudden, he just flipped out and took off, and those coyotes just cut me off. I mean, he came right in between the bird and me.
Stuff like that happens.
Oh, so mad.
Seems about right.
So mad.
Par for the course.
Morel mushroom hunter 3 years ago, same. Mm. I mean, I couldn't tell it any more straight than what you just said. Just I had him right there, his head showing. All of a sudden, he putted and took off running. There's no way he's seen me moving, like your situation.
Still as could be.
And I kind of started looking around because I'm first thing I thought was coyote, fox, something like that, which happens.
Yep.
And here comes a guy on private ground with an orange vest mushroom hunting. Had a whole bag of them. I went over and talked to him. Well, I had permission here 10 years to hunt mushrooms. Oh, so that was 10 years ago. Not now. So, anything like that could happen.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. And if you hunt long enough, deer, turkeys, whatever, you'll have a story like that. Where you're just like, any other time, moment of time, 20 seconds later, they could have came out and I already shot that bird. Yep. Or, you know, a minute before, the bird wouldn't have known they walked through. But no, it had to be right then.
Yeah.
Mushroom hunter had to be right then.
Exactly.
You know, it's just seems like every once in a while it's just one of those little it's
fate.
You know, Mother Nature or whatever just likes to give you the little hey
F
guys,
you, bro.
But well, boys, Scott, we are excited to see what you do this year. I'm guessing you're gonna outscore all of us combined.
No, I don't know. I spent 8 days on him. Last 8 days of the season, trying to kill that triple bearded bird. And here he comes. He's at 50, 40. I've got the safety off, and I hammer him. So mission complete. I walk up there, he's double bearded.
Wasn't the right one.
What's the chances of a double bearded and a triple bearded being right there on the same farm?
That's crazy.
Still
a great bird, obviously.
Well, yeah, I know. I'm thrilled to death. But I just, you know, I'm concentrating on the crosshairs, on the gobstopper, which is a hawk this year. I can't wait to try it out. But, you know, and I just seen multiple beards. That's him. It's been 8 days. I've got him now. And then I hammer him, and I run up there because it's a record book bird. I know this bird's 25 pounds. You're going to have inch and a half spurs and triple bearded. And he was double bearded, inch and eight spurs, ended up weighing 24 pounds, which,
again,
I love it. Don't get me wrong. That's a freaking awesome bird, right. But it wasn't the one I was after. And I clearly know from trail cam pictures. Yeah. Just there's a great picture where he's turned, and you can clearly see three beards, and the spurs are a giveaway too. So
I need to look at my trail cam. I have a bunch of trail cams of some turkey. I need to look at and inspect them hard. I failed to do that.
That's the one I'm after. But yeah,
heck yeah.
Run them cameras too. Yeah, you're exactly right. That tells you a lot.
Yeah.
Well, good luck. Well, if you do kill them, I say we need to have Tales of the Chase.
For sure.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
We've set the stage.
On a record.
We need an episode about a month. We need another episode with you.
And I want to throw something out to our listeners, too. And I'll have to make this quick because we're trying to end it here.
Mm-hmm.
So we jumped. I don't know what rabbit hole we went. But the guy we was talking about, I was telling you, the Alabama-Tennessee guy.
Mm-hmm.
We was talking about turkey populations dropping. So I have noticed this. After he said this, I've been thinking about this a lot. And he says a lot of farmers are fertilizing their fields with chicken mm-hmm. manure. You know, they're getting them from chicken houses.
Chicken right. shit.
Basically, right.
Mm-hmm.
Spreading that. It's a cheap fertilizer. I don't have to buy fertilizer right. to fertilize their fields. We're going to organically spread, you know.
Chicken manure. Yeah.
Chicken manure. And everywhere in Alabama, this guy's got 8 or 10 farms and dozens of birds on every farm. I mean, there's 4 farms now, he was telling me. 2 are in Tennessee, 2 are in Alabama, kind of close to the line there. They're spreading the chicken manure in these fields. And this is what I want our listeners to confirm. I'd never heard of this, but I think there's something behind this. And these 4 farms out of the 8 that spread this, 2 years ago, they spread this stuff, and they did it again this year. You know, they're going to do that every year. They're getting it for free. Why wouldn't you?
Right.
Hasn't seen a turkey one on any of them.
Hmm.
Both farms is like that. And he had a friend telling the same story. It ain't that the birds are leaving, the birds are dying.
Hmm.
Getting sick.
Chickens are medicated.
Yeah.
We give them medication. I mean, I've got little baby chickens right now. I'm giving them the electrolytes and medicated stuff. You're giving them medicated food and things like that. But there's, you know, they're getting, there's a couple diseases. I don't remember what he named off 3 diseases that the wild turkeys can get from the chicken manure.
Bird flu.
In general. Whatever they are, but bird flu, and it's killing the population in them areas. And the other 4 farms that are doing the liquid fertilizer, you know, I don't know what it is. Their birds are still there. There's a dozen birds on them farms.
That's crazy. You wouldn't think.
I wonder if there's been studies or anything about
that'd
that.
That'd be interesting to see.
Yeah.
So, at the
research.
I'm just thinking because my neighbor just put, I don't know what kind of manure it was, but he's just spread manure.
Probably cow. I would assume
it's pretty obvious.
Well, he didn't have a feedlot to be able to collect cow manure. Shit.
But there's more feedlot. There's more feedlots around than there are chickens.
Yeah, but they'll haul chicken shit in. I mean, that's honestly
right. They'll haul it in.
Yeah. There's a guy in Higginsville. That's what he does. It's like really, during this time of year, he'll go dump it in fields.
And you know it too, because it smells like.
Well, it's got me wondering. Ever since he just told me this, he bought a turkey call from me.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling me this story on the phone. So I've been thinking about it hard for the last 2 weeks. And there's a farm in Wellington. I don't hunt there.
Mm-hmm.
But going to work every day this time of year for the last 20 years, I've seen a dozen birds, you know, hens and gobblers. in this 100-acre spot, I see him every single spring. And in the last 2 years, he has been junk dumping chicken manure. I haven't seen a bird for 2 years there.
I believe it.
Hmm.
I bet in you that, I mean, area. That makes sense. I mean, there's bacteria. There's all kinds of shit in that. I wouldn't see why. Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know how much truth. Like I say, I just heard this from this guy a couple of weeks ago, and then I've been thinking about it. And the one place I do know that's happening, I ain't seen a bird there.
Hmm. That's something to look into.
It is.
So yeah. little
listeners.
Listeners, I need some answers on this one.
Yeah.
How much? I've never heard of this.
Yeah, let us know what you know about that.
Could this be hurting some of the turkey population going on? It is my question to everybody out there.
Could be.
Other than in the predators and the coons and all this stuff, you know, and yeah. Bad weather in the spring and
all the plethora of stuff that are going against the wild turkey.
Right. So anyway, that
might be adding chicken shit to it.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, that's just something I'm curious to know about.
That'd be interesting.
Definitely. Well, Scotty, we'd be remiss without asking you to go through a little sequence for us before we get off here. You're the man.
Bravo, sir.
Bam. Bravo. Well done. Scotty, thanks for coming on.
I love it. We'll see y'all later.
See ya.
See ya.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.